Cause we got the alternative energy. Right. Nuclear free autonomy.
And welcome to the Radioactive Show, produced at the studios of 3CR Melbourne and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to this week's special edition of the Radioactive Show, marking International Day of People with Disability. We wanted to share the story of Yami Lester, Yankudjadjara man, who has been a central figure and tireless campaigner in the struggle to end the nuclear industry and also for Aboriginal land rights, education and language. As a young boy, Yami was blinded from the black mist of the first atomic test at Emu Junction in South Australia. And over his lifetime, amongst his many achievements, he's been really instrumental in exposing the story of atomic testing and its impacts on Aboriginal people and the land. He is an important activist in the ongoing campaign against the dumping of nuclear waste and is an ambassador of the No Dump Alliance, which has been successfully countering the proposal by state and federal governments to dump national and international nuclear waste in South Australia. You grew up on a station, and I know you had amazing horse skills. And
Yes, I was brought up on a station here at Walladina, and learned to ride horses and riding no saddles, they call it bareback, learning that way. We used to go mustering for cattle to next door station called Granite Downs, and we used to walk a long way from Lumbina Station, Granite Downs, and quite a few nights camping along the way, and we come back here, and so it was pretty good. I liked it. It's good fun.
And so all that changed, though, in the 1950s when the atomic tests were carried out at Maralinga in Emu Junction. Tell me about what happened then.
In 1953... there was an Emu Junction bomb test, and they started there first, the British, and they moved down to Maralinga. We know today is Maralinga, but they were at Emu Junction first, which is 160 K's from here, Walladina, south from here, and they let the first bomb go, Totem 1, 1953. And I was a young kid, maybe 9, and I remember the smoke, black smoke, coming across, and we were all getting sick. Diarrhea, sore eyes and skin rash and everything like that. And after that, 53, in 1954, our people moved from here. Well, at dinner they moved to a place called Mimili. There for a little while I was, and I had a one eye, the right eye gone altogether, and I left when I had something, I reckon I might have 75 or 80%. Why I say that, because I can still do tracking, see the footprints and all that and do the tracking. Mm-hmm. And 1957, I went totally blind then, and they sent me to Adelaide, Royal Adelaide Hospital, the eye ward. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty sad.
Yeah. How did you feel at that first stage when you realised that was it, you were going to be blind?
No good. I cried for my eyes, and I didn't understand. The hospital people were very good to me and look after me and talk to me, but I couldn't understand English. I only knew a little bit of station English, rough way. Good man from the Blind Institute was visiting Iwood and met up with me, and he let my best friend, he passed away now, but he was a secretary of the Aboriginal Mission in Adelaide, and he said to me, I didn't hear, but apparently he said, we're going to keep you here, not send you back up north, too hard for you, and we're going to keep you and teach you things here. He said that, but I didn't know, I didn't understand. And he made arrangement for me to go to a children's home, it's called Colebrook Home, and was 57 Aboriginal kids there, and I was too old to go to that home, but they made a special lounge for me because there's nowhere else to go. He said, they're going to keep you in Adelaide will go back up north anymore because it's too hard for you. You're blind, you're going to be blind for forever.
You're listening to The Radioactive Show, produced in the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri Country, Fitzroy, Victoria, and broadcast across the land via the Community Radio Network. You're listening to Yami Lester, telling us a little bit of the story of his life, and this is part of 3CR's special broadcast for the International Day of People with a Disability. When you were in Adelaide, that's where you joined the Aboriginal Advancement League. Is that where you first got active?
Yeah, they had an organisation before me, and in the 60s I would start going there and hearing what they talk about, and hearing late Charles Perkins talking and bus freedom ride, and I thought that was great, and I wanted to be in it and say things, and that's how I started, because I listened to him. And another great gentleman was Sir Doug Nicholls. He used to come up every year of NIDOC weekends and give them talks in Adelaide, and he was a great man too. So those two gentlemen were my heroes. I like those two fellas.
Tell me about how you ended up working as an interpreter.
First of all, I'll tell you, my blind friend, he made arrangement for me to go to Blind Institute to work at the tradesmen and making brooms. And they were making a lot of things in those days, but I was only the broom. I just, for fun, calling myself, I was a broomologist because you know, nobody else is saying that. And I was there for a long time, 13 years. And when I was in Adelaide, I was doing part-time interpreting at Adelaide Hospital. And sometimes Port Augusta Court, the part time. Then I heard about Reverend Jim Downing doing that great work in Alice Springs Hospital, interpreting and all that. So I asked him, "You reckon you can use me?" And he was a busy bloke. He didn't hear my letter. I recorded on tape for 12 months. And he heard it and he said, "Oh, yeah, we can use you. We'll do a trial, 3 months try in Alice Springs." And we went up there with two kids and my wife, and we were there and for 3 months, and I finished up staying there for 23 years.
And so during that time in Alice Springs, you became involved with Aboriginal education and language more broadly.
Yeah, I at the Institute for Aboriginal Development, I did Reverend Jim Downing was using me to help with pronunciations and Bijanjara and Yanagunjara, and he was teaching a lot of languages, Bindubi, Aranda, Walbury, or a lot of other language. And he was a very good worker, and he bring a teachers in from local language speakers, and I used to help him with Yanagunjara and Bijanjara, and I was full-time interpreter to the hospital, and going out to bush meetings, and then the courthouse, and the police station. I did for 5.5 years, and I got tired of doing it. Mm. And I went on doing Pijanjara Council land rights, we did that 1981, got the land rights on APY, and in 1985 we got the Uluru Karajuta, negotiated with the federal government, and leased it back to the federal government. 99-year lease, then Mutijulu people can have Uluru Karajuta and work there, and work jointly with the rangers and in the park. And in 92, I retired and come down to back to Wellington, where I used to be when I was a young wee-eye, just a kid on the station. I used to say wee-eye.
Mm. Wow. So what did that feel like, being able to come back to Wellington after all that time away?
Pretty good. I'm broken down now and sitting down. I had a stroke in 2010.
Mm.
And I'm sitting down now, so I was blind before, and now I'm broken down with a walking frame, and I like to sing a song called Walking Frame Blues.
Got the walking frame blues, steady, steady is the...
You're listening to The Radioactive Show, broadcast around the country by the Community Radio Network. We'll return with more of Yami's story I met you on one of the Radioactive Exposure tours, and I guess I first knew of your work because you were really instrumental in gaining recognition of the atomic tests at Maralinga and Emu Field, and also...
Yeah, that was very, very hard. The government gave a very secret, and the Prime Minister was very secret, and they gave him very quiet, not only to Aboriginal people, but the ordinary and non-Aboriginal people too. They never told them what they were doing.
Yeah. And so how did you go about raising the awareness of that and also organising to get compensation and a clean-up of the test sites?
Yeah, well, when I was working for Institute for Aboriginal Development in Alice Springs, one morning I had a flu, and I didn't go to the office. I was home, and I heard on ABC program called AM program, and Sir Ernest Titterton, he was an English scientist and boss and running in Maralinga, and I remember patrol officer Mr. McDougall. He used to come up and talk to the adults, and the adults would tell us as kids to come and piss off, and you know, you're making too much noise and all that. And but I learned later, in 1985, what happened was, patrol officers used to talk and say how many people and put on a big book the names and ask but tell them not to go south, walk down to the south of Walladina. And I remember all this, and I ring Adelaide Advertising, and I said, "Hey, Sir Ernest Titterton's talking a lot of rubbish." I remember what happened at my end. And I didn't know Adelaide Advertiser was working on Maralinga bomb tests. And I talked to the main one, and he had two fellas working with him. And he said, when I was talking to him, he said, "Hey," he turned to the two fellas, he said, "Hey, guys, we found the bomb." Saying what I knew. And anyway, that's how it started. And I was talking a lot, and I asked Malcolm Fraser, when he was Prime Minister, for Royal Commission. He said, "Nah, nothing doing." And when Bob Hawke became a Prime Minister, so I went and asked him for Royal Commission, and he said, "No, nothing doing." So Bijander Council told me, "Yemi, you're talking too much. You go quiet now, and we can help you." And I said, "Okay, I'll go quiet." And he got the Bijander Council asked Uniting Church for money, and they sent me to England, London, to talk to scientific people and to the Queen, but she was too busy to have a cup of tea and a cucumber sandwich with me. So anyway, that was okay. And I meeting with scientific six fellas, very smart people. They weren't giving nothing away. And I had a meeting with them and come back, and in 1984 and 85, Bob Hawke down to the Royal Commission on the Murralinga, and that was very good. We couldn't prove anything because we never had a doctor's medical report, because when we got sick here, we never went to doctors, nothing. Nearest clinic was Annabella Presbyterian Mission, and we didn't go there. We had no transport, only camels, and no truck, nothing. And in a Royal Commission, we couldn't prove anything like that. But what our lawyer did prove, there was radiation fallout over all the dinner. Mm. And that's all. Mm. So that was pretty good anyway by the lawyers.
And so what was the outcome of that? Did you receive compensation?
Yeah, some people, not many, about 14 people got a little bit of a compensation.
Wow, that's not much at all, is it?
Nah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Pastor cleaned up, but other experts say they didn't clean it properly.
Mm.
Still some rubbish there, some nuclear still there.
Mm.
So other experts are saying that. And when I was asking for a Royal Commission, that's my voice, but my help come from the work people at Murralinga and the EMU, the soldiers, I think, and they were very good help. And when their turn came, I trying to help them, what we call ngaparji ngaparji in our language.
Tell me about those issues of access, living with a disability, and how you overcame them.
Oh, living with disability is pretty hard, very, very hard. When I was just blind and walking and working, it was all right, not too bad. But now, can walk, no good now, really not very helpful at all. And I just got to put up with it, and it's really, I get it sad sometimes now and again, but when I have a friend come and visiting, and I get happy, and talk to friends, I'm happy. And I've met a lot of friends living here and working in Alice Springs and working with land rights movement and Uluru Karajura lands and all that, and it was very, very good.
Mm.
But now I'm just sitting down and thinking about the world going around, I suppose. Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. And so have you seen changes being a young person with a disability back in, you know, the 60s and 70s? Do you think it's easier for people nowadays? Yeah, what changes have you seen?
When you're young, disability, to help you to do things, and you try to do things and learn things, and you're trying and doing that, and but when you get older, there's nothing much you can do as you're older. and just sit down and wait for friends, and they can come and talk to you and all that. The young disability work, you can try, do things. Like when I was living in Adelaide, young, I play blind men's cricket. And we used to play that, and very good, and run around, and good fun. We went to Sydney, a carnival every 2 years, Brisbane, Hobart, Melbourne, Adelaide. That was good. But when I went away from there to Alice Springs, it was different. Different work.
Sounds to me like for people living in more remote areas, or, you know, as people age, there is a big gap in the support services that are available for people.
It's a bit hard now, but I think government and Aboriginal organisations trying to do something now for old people that got disabilities on APY land and or somewhere else down to Satuna Way or Oak Valley or anywhere like that, and in Northern Territory, and they're trying to help aged care and common caring for the old people. They're trying to do that now for Aboriginal people and the government. They're trying to do that now.
Good to hear, yeah. This is going to be going to air on the International Day of People with a Disability. And I'm just wondering if there's any messages you'd like to share with people, especially for...
I'd like to say that don't give up. Keep on trying to do things. Disability, trying to move on and help yourself and work in with the aged care people and helping you, and you can do that with the help, and you can do that really well. And so that's all I can say to them, and always try something. Now I've got to go and have a drink of water, now cold water. It's summer's day today, they tell me, ABC.
Thanks, Yami.
Thank you.
I'll speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for tuning into The Radioactive Show, and I hope you've enjoyed these stories from Yami Lester's life. Yami still continues the campaign to stop the nuclear industry, and regular listeners would have heard from his daughters, Rose and Karina Lester, who are at the forefront of the successful organising that has seen South Australians, for the most part, rejecting the Nuclear Fuel Cycle Royal Commission's proposal to import 138,000 tonnes of high-level and long-lived nuclear waste from around the world. To hear more on nuclear peace and energy issues, you can find our podcasts at 3cr.org.au. And if you have any feedback, please get in contact with us via our Facebook page, The Radioactive Show, or email us on radioactiveshow.3cr@gmail.com. This show was produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio on the stolen lands of the Wurundjeri, now known as Fitzroy, Victoria. And it can be heard around the country thanks to the great work of the Community Radio Network. And this show has been a part of 3CR's special broadcast for the International Day of People with Disability. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia, on the Kulin Nation. For more information and to find out how you can support 3CR, go to www.3cr.org.au.